start the recording for you guys. And let's start with names again. So would you, use the mics.
John.
Nope. Yosh.
Nick.
Jay.
Beatrice.
Wendy.
Raghu.
Kumi.
Ryan.
Ji Young.
Lauren.
And Manny. I'm Andrea. We'll let Manny say his name when he comes back. But okay, so you had a question or a comment. Let's start there.
Yes, I was. I think you've stressed the point about not forcing yourself to be mindful, but being mindful. And it's something I've struggled with a lot over the last year or so. It kind of brings into mind the duality of the monkey chasing its tail. And somehow I have this phrase, you know, the meditator is a meditation.
Mm-hmm.
So your intention is actually, you're trying to be aware of the experience, but your intention is the experience.
Say more. What do you mean by that? There are different ways I can imagine you meaning that, so.
Right. So you're being mindful, you're making an observation, but you are part of the observation because you're carrying on the activity.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And that's where I kind of feel I'm chasing my own tail.
So there's a way to, I mean, so what I'd say is that there's the object of experience, and then there's the awareness of that object or the knowing of that experience. And our system, I mean, it's a self-reflective capacity, this mindfulness, right? It is the capacity to be aware not only of the object, but the knowing of that object and the awareness that we know that. So it's that this is part of the function of being human in a way. It's one of the special aspects of being a human being that we have this self-reflective capacity, that we not only know experience, know like the sensations and know that we know the sensations, but we are aware that we're knowing that. And so this kind of knowing, the monkey chasing its tail feeling, I think, happens when we try to turn around and look at that. Try to say, well, this is that experience, but there's a way in which so here's how Sayadaw Tejaniya describes it.
Is that something to do with consciousness? Being conscious itself is the.
Well, the consciousness. So the way the Buddha describes this is, consciousness is one of five basic functions that create most of our experience. There's body experience and the knowing of it, the consciousness. There's perception. There's feeling, pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. And then there's intentional mental activity. So that it's a kind of a, it's one way to divide up experience. It's not the only way, but it's the way the Buddha divided up experience. And the consciousness piece that he talked about, So this is kind of a refinement of definitions. Consciousness is just a simple knowing. You know, it is that there's a sight and the knowing of it. There's a sound and the knowing of it. It's like the interface between body and mind, or the interface between even a thought and the knowing of it. You know, so there's the object and the knowing of it. There's a difference between those two, and we can recognize the difference between those two. Consciousness itself happens every single moment of our experience. It is not the same thing as that self-reflective capacity. So, you know, dogs have consciousness. They may have a little bit of that self-reflective capacity, I don't know, but the self-reflective capacity, that's mindfulness. That is, it's not the same thing as consciousness. It's like, we can be conscious, you know, it's like when we're driving down the freeway, lost in thought, you know, we get to our exit, we take our exit, we get where we're going, and it's like, wow, how did I get here? You know, I did not remember taking that exit. You know, so the consciousness can be present without that self-reflective capacity. So that's a pointing to the difference between the two. So what we're cultivating is this self-reflexive capacity. It does not happen every single moment. It is a natural part of our system. It's there, and it arises naturally, and it's almost like part of the way that the whole process unfolds is that this capacity to be have this self-reflective awareness arises, and somebody tells us, "Hey, that's useful. Look at that," you know, and that's what the Buddha did essentially. You know, he recognized that that capacity could be turned in the direction that would support freedom. And so it naturally arises, and then when somebody points to, so this is in a way the conditioning of how meditation even begins, somebody points to that and says, yeah, begin to recognize that. I mean, I don't think if somebody hadn't, you know, pointed out to me that, had not pointed out that to me, that I ever would have thought, I mean, we know that this happens to us. We lose, from the time we're kids, we know this, that this quality of being there comes and goes. But nobody tended to ever say to me, yeah, notice that. What's that like when you know that you know? And so the Buddha pointed this out, and he pointed out a kind of a particular perspective that's useful to cultivate. And so we hear this. This is the Sutta Mayapanya I talked about. We hear this. The mind gets interested in that and begins to do something with it. It's all not self. It's all the unfolding of experience. And yet there is a way in which the agency of our system does play with this. So I wouldn't say that consciousness is that capacity. I mean, just in terms of the way the Buddha used the words. Sometimes the word consciousness. So I like the word awareness, actually, for mindfulness, partly because it shades between consciousness and mindfulness. And for me, the word awareness is more evocative of the experience than mindfulness is. And mindfulness has a quality of mental kind of thing, but awareness feels more diffuse or more pervading kind of. And that's more the experience to me. So I don't remember if there's something else in your question, but...
Yeah, I think that kind of goes around it. So you have, you know, I mean, just to take a gross example, you have the truck going loudly there. You have the senses picking up the sound. And then you have the perception, the recognition of the sound. And then, of course, you have the feeling. You know,
right.
It's mm-hmm. annoying.
Well, that's different than the feeling. So again, this is language, but feeling, we often use the word feeling to mean an emotion or a reaction.
Right.
The Buddha used the translation we use for the word vedana, the feeling. There's a subtler piece. It's like, is that sound experienced as pleasant or unpleasant or neutral?
Right.
And that's different than the experience of the annoying. So that's, that's another subtlety of the experience that's important to recognize. Sometimes we just think that the annoying is the unpleasantness. But there's a way that the mind begins to see that, well, that can be unpleasant and I don't have to be annoyed. It's just an unpleasant experience.
So the vedana is the feeling of pleasantness or unpleasantness.
Or neutrality,
Which mm-hmm. leads to the next
yes.
level.
Yes, yep.
Got it. I don't know. Maybe I'm confused. But somehow I felt like I was...
The chasing your tail piece was, that's the piece I wanted to come back to. So you know, the feeling of like trying to turn around and catch the awareness, the way Sayadaw describes it, that's what I was going to talk about, is how does Sayadaw describe this experience of, you know, knowing that quality of awareness rather than it feeling like it, like trying to turn around and like look at your own eye, you know, it's, he described it as like, you know, looking, if you have glasses, and some of you do, some of you don't, but maybe you can get a sense of it from thinking about looking through sunglasses or something. With glasses, for me, I'm quite nearsighted, and so, you know, the glasses are the whole way that I can see the world, but I don't often remember that I'm looking through glasses. I can know the difference, you know, when I do that. It's like a bunch of blobs. there's a kind of a knowing of the difference between when the glasses are there and when they're not there. And as Sayadaw says, the functioning of the mind, this, you know, this the way the mind works, and this it's like the whole way that we are able to know the world, but we usually don't notice it. And we're usually more interested in the things that we're seeing. Like I'm interested, like with the glasses on, I'm interested in the fact that I can see the world, and not so much in the fact that I'm wearing glasses. Now I can know. I can. It's almost more of an understanding. But I can be aware, not like I'm seeing the glasses. It's not. I mean, I can actually. I can notice like little reflections on the glasses and be aware that I'm wearing glasses in that way. But it's more of an understanding of the clarity of what I'm seeing is because of the glasses. And so it's almost a similar way. It feels more like, for me, it feels like stepping back, that I understand, yeah, you know, so like while I'm talking here, it's like I'm very aware that this seeing is through these glasses, but it's not like I'm looking at the glasses. And so it's very similar, this knowing of the awareness itself, of the mindfulness itself. It feels more like a stepping back and an understanding that the whole way that we are experiencing things is through that. And so that I've talked a little bit about curiosity of how does the mindfulness feel. It's not always the same experience. It kind of depends on what the objects are, how the mind is attending to it, how concentrated the mind is. There's lots of different ways it feels, because it's kind of, there's a kind of a mixture of qualities that go into the experience that happens when the mind is aware of that awareness. And so the quality feels more like a stepping back with some understanding, and then a sense of, well, what is it like now? I mean, does it feel like a flow of experience from thing to thing? Does it feel like a pervading experience? Does it feel like a precise kind of landing on that? And then, oh, that, kind of more jumpy. So I think some of our issue there is the idea, you know, of how do I turn around and look at that? But similarly with the eye, you know, here's another analogy of, you know, it's like we can't turn around and look at the eye. But we can know how the eye is working through how it's seeing. We can recognize, you know, that there's, you know, gunk in the eye in the morning, that it feels, you know, cloudy or something like that. And we know the difference between when the eye feels like, you know, maybe we're beginning to get cataracts and there's a kind of a dulling of the color. And we know that there's something in the eye that's different versus when we look out at the world and there's fog. We know that that's not the eye, you know, so there's the difference there. We understand the difference between a change in the eye and a change in the objects in the world that the eye sees. And it's similar to that, you know, that we begin to understand that difference. So it's, again, it's not something we turn around and look at it, but it's more we know that through how it's meeting experience.
Yeah, I think I get it. I think the eye is a very good example, because the fact that you can see the object is an indication that the eye is working.
Yes, exactly. Yes. And it's very similar.
Similarly with, yeah, being reflective and being aware.
Yes.
And that kind of leads to the other point you're making, which was what causes it to drop away. And that could depend on, you know, something being very sticky, the emotional state, your... I think one thing I find that's creates anxieties are things like the schedule itself. I noticed at 6:30 you're like trying to get everything done and the recording set, and you had a frown on your face. And, you know, so schedule plays a big part.
Yeah, there's many things: right. How much sleep we've gotten, how much food we've had, what's going on in the mind, conversation we might have had. There's many things. Yes,
and that causes the mindfulness to drop away.
I would say that it's a condition more than a cause. Because a cause to me means A causes B. It makes it happen. And most of what the Buddha talked about in terms of this kind of relationship was A conditions B. Because if A causes B, there's no other option. When A conditions B, other conditions can come in for some other C to happen.
Yeah, I think you're getting into karma.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, Jay.
I just wanted to follow up quickly on the same topic here. So just on the quality of awareness, so frequently I'll be aware, but I'll have the sense of there's some distance between me and the observed object or surroundings, sounds, whatever. There's sort of a distance there, and I'm observing it. And then occasionally I will get, but when I broaden out, my sort of just settle back and broaden out, the distance seems to become less compared to if I'm doing sort of a more of a one-pointed, maybe awareness of the breath or particular object or something. There seems to be frequently more distance there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then I've heard the instruction, I can't remember exactly where, but looking for the looker, so to speak, sort of just briefly turning and looking for what's looking.
Again, so, I would encourage it not to be a turning and looking
okay.
But more of a
broadening back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that yeah. That to me, that looking for the looker, it's like the act of looking is more obvious than
yeah. It's not really looking, it's just sort of just a slight shift of awareness.
Yeah. Yes.
Slight shift of awareness to not to all the objects, but an awareness of the whole system.
Right.
As
yes.
to what's happening in the whole system. And when I've done that, I get these brief moments of just a sense of there's just awareness. You know, that's it. Just a sense of broad awareness. There's no distance
yep.
between,
uh-huh.
mm-hmm. You know, the observer and, you know. So, and that seems, but I've only, that only occurs for very brief periods. And then it goes away. But that seems like a more accurate representation of reality, so to speak, in that there's just awareness. And I'm not sure, you know. So.
Yeah. This is actually the topic I was going to cover tomorrow, but since it's here, we'll go with it. But I will do a guided meditation on this tomorrow. We'll start with that. So what you're describing about the sense sometimes of the awareness and the object being separate, you know, or the you know, it's like the experience and the knowing of it, that there's a feeling of a separation, or sometimes feeling like there's, you know, it feels just like it's there's no distance, no mm-hmm. separation, and the feeling of the distance sometimes being shorter or less,
yeah
that.
Right.
It's very interesting, I think, to explore in that whether there's any views or attitudes that are connected with that, because sometimes there can be a subtle kind of almost like, oh, I can be okay with this if I'm not right in the middle of it, you know, so a little bit of a subtle aversion or separation that, or a feeling of separation that comes from a subtle aversion. Sometimes that can happen. And it does happen. I mean, not even sometimes. It early in practice, I would say that often happens. And it the feeling of being separated from something is part of how we can be. Oh, it's like, okay, I can actually be with that. I can be with that through not being like so enmeshed in it. You know, sometimes when we're caught in something, it can feel like there's no distance because we're so caught in it. So the feeling of being close to or not separate or separate, you know, sometimes that can be about both sides of it, can be about some kind of reactivity. And at times it can also be, in both cases, a sense of the separation and the observing. There can be, like, the mind be very balanced there. Like when we're observing an object, it's almost more the way that we're observing, the technology of the meditation that's creating that experience of separation or the sense of awareness and object not being right together. Mm-hmm. And there's no reactivity in the mind. There's all wholesome qualities in the mind. So it's not, you know, necessarily better in a way to have the experience of the non-separation. Mm-hmm. And there can be in the non-separation also that experience of no defilement, no reactivity, nothing in the way there. I described this to Sayadaw Utejaniya at one point, exactly like you're doing. You know, it's like I described, you know, but I prefaced it because he'd asked me, what is it like when there's no defilement in the mind? What's the experience like? And I came back and I said, there's not just one experience. I've noticed different ways it feels at different times. I said, sometimes it can feel like there's a separation, like I'm looking at the experience and there's a separation between the awareness. And sometimes it feels like there's no separation. And his explanation of that, the way he put that, was the mindfulness is interested in different aspects of the experience in those cases. In one case, it's interested in that the object and the knowing, or the object and the awareness, are different. They're not the same. And so it highlights the feeling of separateness. It highlights the separation because it sees they're not the same. And in the other case, he said, it's highlighting the fact that they're happening simultaneously. Mm-hmm. So from the perspective of the way the Buddha talked about experience, I think the Buddha was much more interested in what is the experience than what is reality.
Sure.
And so our minds can experience things in many different ways. And when there is clarity in the mind, when there's not greed, aversion, and delusion in the mind, it doesn't always feel just one way. And so the reality that the Buddha was interested in exploring was that, the experiential reality. And is in that experiential reality, is there greed, aversion, or delusion? Or is there the absence of greed, aversion, or delusion? And he wasn't so interested in saying, this experience is a better reflection of what's actually happening out there than this experience.
Maybe if I phrase it, is the experience of observing and having a distance there, sort of, does that contain some delusion?
Well, again, it's possible that there's some, and it's also possible not.
Or when there is no distance, and there is just awareness, and you're aware that you're aware, and that's it. Is that also have delusion? Probably could. Both states,
it knows? Could exactly, and yeah. So that we're interested in the delusion and the greed and the aversion, yeah, right. And is it present, yeah, rather than and some. What I would say, at least in my experience, is often this first taste of the non-separation and clarity.
Yeah.
Is so compelling.
It is.
That we think that's it.
Yeah, that was sort of my first thought.
This is where I'm supposed to be headed. This is the kind of place I want to be. And then we create an experience out of it. We reify it. We think that's the object or place we're supposed to go. And there's suffering.
So
it's the suffering that we're interested in, not the state. But there's something very compelling about that state.
There is.
And And, you know, it's very cool. But it's not, I think partly it's so compelling because it's not something that we've been familiar with.
Yeah.
You know, and it is often more possible when there's less greed, aversion, and delusion in the mind. And so it's connected with also the more release from the defilements.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that we think, and also I'd say that place of being in that non-separation, it's like we can live in that space. You know, it's there are times when we touch into that space and it feels more like a woo-woo experience where it's like, you know, there's no way I could walk across the room while this is happening. But there's a form of that experience that is just like, it is completely workable in daily life.
Mm-hmm. I can see that.
And so that's also very compelling. You know, it's like, as opposed to the concentrated states, when you get that focused on one thing, you can't walk across the room. But this has a quality that feels very... So there's a way in which that's also very compelling, that we recognize, oh, this is a state that I can live with. But again, the fact of that state or the experience of that may still have delusion.
Yes.
So that's what we're really interested in, is
right.
That part, yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.